Hello. So we're quick to sit on the couch together.
That's very exciting.
From Politico, this is Women Rule, where we bring you real talk with women bosses. I'm Anna Palmer, senior Washington correspondent and co-author of the Politico Playbook. Today, we're bringing you my conversation with actress and activist Piper Perabo, live in collaboration with Anna Marie Cox, host of the podcast With Friends Like These, as part of the 2018 Women Rule Summit in Washington, D.C. Women Rule is produced in partnership with our founding partners, Google and the Tory Burch Foundation. Piper's breakthrough role was starring in the film Coyote Ugly in 2000, but she's maybe best known for playing CIA agent Annie Walker in the series Covert Affairs for 5 seasons. More recently, she was arrested while protesting during Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing. I started by asking Piper about her transformation from actress to activist and how it was a series of aha moments that got her there.
When I wasn't doing anything, I was sort of in that space where I was looking for, like, how can I help? What can I do? And my cousin does refugee resettlement for the International Rescue Committee. And so he was like, you can help here. You know, like, just was someone who said, please come help. And so I started working with them and sort of opened my eyes to the larger refugee crisis going on around the world. And then the big aha moment for me was Trump's Access Hollywood tape. I felt like, I must be so naive. I must be living in a country that I don't understand. All of a sudden, I felt alone and confused. And then when he won, I was so upset and bewildered. And after sort of crying for 3 days, I just started calling everyone I knew and said, who's doing something? Who's trying to do something? How can I help? What can I do? And so I just started there. And Dream Hampton, who is an activist, I heard her speaking to John Legend, actually in a podcast, and she had said that Legend was interested in getting involved in the incarceration reform movement, and what should he do? And she told him he should listen for a year before he says anything. And so I thought, oh, and she said, you show up all the time. Every time you're asked, you show up and listen. And so once I'd called everybody to say, what's going on? How can I help? Then I just started showing up and listening.
So were you traveling? What did that look like? I mean, showing up, I mean, protests are happening across the country.
I started traveling. So, like, there was the march from Charlottesville to D.C. Remember that, after Charlottesville happened? And so I heard about this march where people were marching against white supremacy. So I flew into the march and started marching. And I learned protest songs, and I met all these people from other orgs and other parts of the country. And then the Doug Jones special election happened, and he seemed like a good candidate. And I knew people with money, so I thought, let me see if I can connect somehow to Alabama and offer my assistance for fundraising. And we got so connected that I flew down to Alabama and was driving people to the polls on election day. And so I just kept looking. I just kept looking for places where I could be of service to people and causes that I believed in, and then trying to get there.
That's so interesting because, you know, there is something of a unfortunate tradition almost in American activism where once an event or an issue becomes the center of attention, a lot of the white ladies zoom in to take over, and there's not a lot of attention paid to, I'm going to go and listen. I'm going to let the people who've been marginalized be the ones to lead me.
Actually, before I went down to Alabama, I got involved in supporting Jones, and then a really smart woman who teaches at the New School said, I said, like, I might go down to Alabama and drive people to the polls. And she said, you better learn a lot more about Alabama before you go down there. And I was like, okay. And she was like, I would start with these 5 grassroots organizations who've been working for decades for change for women of color and rural women in Alabama. And she was like, you need to learn all about them, you need to find out what they're doing, and you need to find out how you can support them.
Like, yeah, so especially as a celebrity, like, the impulse is, I mean, I imagine one reason that one travels that journey is you like being the center of attention, or at least it's okay with you and are attracted to being in the center of things. So what does it feel like to make a conscious decision to step back?
It feels a lot better, actually. I'm not that comfortable being the center of attention. It just comes with the job. And what I recognize is that my platform is my privilege. And so I can, this thing, like a press line that I was kind of uncomfortable with, you know, or like when they say, what are you wearing? Or like, who are you wearing? Or whatever that stupid question is. I don't have to answer that question. I can use this press line to like talk about something else.
Yeah, I like it. I like,
especially
I like,
if you buy your own dress, you don't have to say anything about it. Like, I'm wearing my own dress. I'm worried about Alabama.
Who's ever interviewed a celebrity knows they don't answer your questions anyway. No. So like, why not?
They're very like politicians in that way. They just pivot to whatever they want to talk about.
I think Anna Marie brings up an important kind of point, which is like you didn't feel like you knew enough. That can be kind of paralyzing, right? Like, I don't know, you felt you had to research five different things. I mean, how did you feel like finally you were educated enough that, all right, now I can like jump in, I'm here.
I'm never going to be educated enough, but it's part of like my nature that I'm curious, and also I don't want to show up like some dummy on the ground, you know, like, oh, I bought my car. It's like, how about know like what's going on? What are the universities? What are the organizations within those universities? Like, who's already doing the work? And then start listening to them, and then that's how you're going to really understand what's going on. Like, no one wants you to come down and invent some new org. Like, that's annoying.
So what have you learned? What are some of the surprises you've had along the way? Or maybe just things you didn't realize, not so much surprise, but like a depth of understanding that you thought you understood something, but really you didn't understand.
I mean, I think like privilege is something that I'm still trying to understand. And like, I was invited to speak at a thing in New York. I live in New York, and I vote in New York. And I was invited to speak at an event that was talking about women who are incarcerated at Rikers. And I was saying this to a friend of mine who's an environmental policy advisor and a woman of color, and she said, why did they ask you to speak? Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know. And she said, is that a real issue of yours, incarcerated women at Rikers? And I said, no, I don't really know that much about it. I'm gonna have to learn a lot before I speak. And she said, that's your privilege, and you need to tell them that if you're gonna come and speak, you will only come if you bring someone who is at the front of that fight and who does know what they're talking about, and you need to like make space for them.
I think that's one of the hardest things for people with privilege to understand, that it actually means sometimes stepping back, that there is that you're going to get your chances. Like, your chances are going to come.
I mean, I think you see it sometimes, like, right near the end, it hasn't ended, but near the end of the big first movement of Occupy, when there were, like, these protests going on in New York, where there's a law in New York that you need a permit to have amplified sound. So if you're going to do a protest, you can only speak as loud as your own voice will carry. And there were these huge protests happening, and so they do this thing called human microphone. I'm sure some of you know this, where the person speaking has to speak in short sentences, and then it's repeated backwards across the crowd. And one thing that it does is makes the person who's speaking like stay on point, not go on and on about this one time. But also, it makes everyone in the crowd repeat the sentences of the speaker. So if you even go to that protest, by saying those phrases out loud, I think you start to understand things in a different way, like coming out of your mouth. That was really surprising for me.
Talk about, so you get kind of educated, Trump is the catalyst for you in terms of what kind of brings your activism to a new level. But really, things escalated for you around the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. You came to Washington. What was that experience like?
So when Sessions and Trump were going to get rid of DACA, I was really upset about that. And I live in New York, and there were protests going on in front of Trump Tower, and a woman that I know in the immigration movement called me and said, do you want to go get arrested tomorrow? And I was like, let me think about that.
Let's get a coffee, sure.
And I said, I don't know. I don't know if I do. And she said, well, there's going to be a training on how to get arrested tonight. Do you want to go to that? And I said, yeah, I want to go to that. And so I went kind of to meet like people, like who goes to a how to get arrested training? Like I kind of just want to like know you guys, you know what I mean? And I decided that I didn't want to get arrested the next day, but in the end I ended up holding the safe space for people who were getting arrested so that the press can see what's going on. So you need to be able to like hold back crowds. But then I knew how to get arrested. And so when Kavanaugh came up, it was before Dr. Blasey Ford came forward. And I'm sure we all have different opinions in this room, but like, I mean, the president is an unindicted co-conspirator in a felony investigation, and I don't think he should be appointing Supreme Court justices until that's been settled. So I was like, especially I don't want this guy who's gonna take away Roe v. Wade. So I thought, oh, this is when I used that arrest thing that I learned. And I knew a bunch of women were going to stand up and disrupt, and say why they disagreed. And I thought, I'm going to do that and see. I didn't really know what was going to happen, but I decided, like, you know, you get to a point sometimes where you're like, not today. Like, that was my day.
So I've never been arrested. What was that like?
Have you been arrested?
I know, for the audio audience, Anna Marie has raised her hand.
What were you arrested for?
I'd rather not talk about it right now.
I didn't know it was that kind of a raid.
It's an interesting story, but yeah, I'll just save it for a different podcast.
Great, I really want to hear it now. But so, I mean, what does that mean? How did it go down for you? Where was it?
So it's different getting arrested all over the country. Obviously, like, the laws are different. And when you're in a federal building or whether you're in a public building or whether you're on public property, like, the laws change. So if you're going to get arrested, you should really maybe go to a training or ask somebody who's been arrested so that you sort of know what's going to happen. In the Senate hearings for the Supreme Court justice, 23 citizens are allowed to, or Americans are allowed to watch. And so you have to get online, and we got online like in the dawn light, and they were going to let us in 23 at a time, and I knew that I could get arrested. So I had bail money in cash and my driver's license, I was a Girl Scout, in one pocket, and then bail money for somebody else in case somebody else needed money in the other pocket, and like a cell phone battery in my cell phone. And I knew why I was opposed to Kavanaugh. And so when I got my chance to stand up and say, I knew 5 to 10 sentences, I thought, I got out like 2 sentences. I mean, like, that's all I knew going in, was like, and I'm gonna stand up and start talking. I mean, it was really scary. It was really scary.
For a lot of us, the Kavanaugh hearings and the desire to oppose them was really personal. Was it personal for you?
It was personal for me because my bodily autonomy is very personal to me. And I believe that women and men have fought for this since before I was born. And that was a lot of work. And I'm not just gonna sit there silently while somebody takes it away. And I believe that silence is consent.
I get to lead the applause. So there is a part of activism that's yelling. And that's, you know, chaining your body to whatever and going and marching. And then there's another part of activism, which is sometimes more difficult, which is what happens in our personal lives. How do your values and your activism show up in those relationships?
It's challenging. I mean, like, I'm sure for all of us, like, going home for Thanksgiving, especially with extended family that we don't have these conversations with all the time, like, Thanksgiving now is so fraught because you're like, hi. So, like, not a huge fan of Thanksgiving right now. But one of the things that was really interesting about it, actually, is I was in some ways concerned about how it would affect my work relationships that I was getting so active and so loud. And, I mean, everybody's business is different. And so some businesses, it's a big deal, and some businesses, it's not. But in my business, I've seen men get a DUI and get a giant franchise movie right away. And I thought, well, then I'm going to get active. And, like, look, I'm not going to worry about that. And, in fact, I found that, like, by getting active, so many more people in my industry were reaching out to me. Like, it strengthened my business relationships because people know where I stand and that I'm serious about it.
I'm curious, so does that mean that Hollywood is not as liberal as we think it is? That's a stereotype, but you're saying that you were worried your activism was going to...
I think, like, being, like... saying you're a liberal and, like, getting arrested for what you believe in are two different things, you know? And some people are happy to, like, write a check, but they're like, ooh, the show's going to open, like, next week, maybe don't say anything about blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. When the rubber meets the road, I think that's where, like, the businesses are similar. It's like, you know, if you're, like, at some march and your boss doesn't know about it, like, no problem. But once it starts to get present, that's when I was a little nervous about Hollywood there.
Well, talk about what fuels you to keep going. I think that's one of the questions that, I mean, you're obviously very passionate and you've been protesting, but, you know, there's fatigue. And I think there's a real fatigue from the Trump factor. It's hard for a lot of people I talk to all the time about staying on 10 all the time. You know, how do you make sure they, all right, I'm gonna come to the Women Rule Summit. I'm gonna come and I'm gonna march again. I'm gonna keep going.
I mean, partly it's like who I am as a person. Like, if you're a curious person, it's so fun to go into a room like this and all the random women who aren't on their phone, mm-hmm. who are like, you can talk to in the lobby. And when you see like on your name tag, like, oh, I don't even know what that company does. Like, I'm a curious person. And so going into these spaces, like how to get arrested training, that's really interesting to me. Like, I kind of want to just go look around and meet all these smart people. I think also... there's this podcast, I don't even think it's on anymore, called Politically Reactive with Kamau
Bell
and Marie. And after the election, I remember Kamau was like, this is going to be a lot of work, and you're all going to get really tired. And he was like, especially those of you who haven't fought before, you're going to feel really tired because you've never fought like this before. Although, like, there are days when I feel really disheartened and pissed off. I also... I'm so excited to be living in a time of change. And I think that's why it's so uncomfortable, is because we're in real change right now. And that's why we're so exhausted and uncomfortable. Like, we're living through an important moment in history. Like, be a part of it. When you're like somebody's grandma and they ask you like, oh my gosh, like what was that like? Did you march? Be able to say like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I wonder if there are particular connections or moments you've had that have been especially meaningful for you in this time.
You mean like in activism?
Yeah. Although I guess maybe more than that too, if that's the right answer.
There's one activist named Audie Barkin who is dying of ALS. And the first time I became aware of him, he's the one who confronted Jeff Flake on the plane about why he was going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. And I thought that was so brave. I think he was on Pod Save America. And that was the first time I heard him talking, and I was like, what's going on with this guy's voice? Because I just listened to the podcast. And then they said later that he has ALS. And not only is he a charismatic and smart leader, but he's literally using his dying days to try and improve this country. That's really inspiring. And it really makes you feel like I could probably do more. You know? And so, like, meeting someone like Audie Barkin was really cool. Now I've like marched beside him, and I think he's like inspiring.
So obviously we're talking about your passion, and you've talked about getting involved, and we have to talk a little bit about what that's meant in your industry. I'm wondering about your influence on your colleagues. Like, how you got excited. So are you dragging people kicking and screaming? Are you recruiting them? Are you an evangelist?
I mean, like, just like in this room, like how I'm talking about how to get arrested, like I think there is within my industry, people who are influencers have the ability to like pull the spotlight over here or pull the attention over here. And that's a real power that you have. And you should use it. And I don't even necessarily need to tell them what they have to use it for, but I think it's just intimidating. Like, I never door knocked until this midterm election. I was so afraid to door knock. Like, I thought people are gonna ask me about like tax legislation or like stuff I don't like know that much about. And I don't want to get in an argument with somebody like at their house. What if their kids are home? Or like, I don't know. But then I went and learned about door knocking, and it's not that scary. And you only door knock for the party of the candidate you're supporting. So you're not gonna get in an argument with somebody because they're like, oh yeah, I'm voting for her. Oh, okay, thanks so much. Here's the voting information. Like, have a great day. So I think, like, a lot of it with my colleagues is just, like, giving them the information to not be afraid, mm-hmm. just to so they know what it really is. Even if you're a movie star, like, you can phone bank.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe you can't go door-to-door if you're... Oprah went door-to-door?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, Oprah went door-to-door. So, I don't know. You can't be more famous than her. So, get to work.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, like, I think that a stereotypical response might be that, aren't you worried about getting recognized? I think some people are worried about not getting recognized, probably.
Both happen to me. Like, sometimes I knock on people's doors, and they're like, oh, my God. And other times, they're like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, you don't know who I am. Like, both is weird.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, it's being a regular human, which is sometimes...
And that's the same for everybody. You know, like, it's awkward, and you knock on people's doors, and you're trying to talk to them, and... you do your best, and sometimes they're nice to you, and like sometimes people slam their door in my face. One lady slammed her door in my face so hard, she slammed it, and then she opened it up more than she had the whole time, just so she could slam it harder in my face.
So that person was mismarked on the...
I literally put, like, not voting for
you. Right, okay. What is the most successful evangelistic moment you've had? Like, if there's someone, you don't have to name names, but I'm curious about your turnover rate here, like your completion rate of like getting people involved and how you do it.
I mean, like, there's a lot of people I'm working on because part of it takes time and part of it takes proving that, like, I'm out here doing it and I haven't lost my job and, like, I still can be on TV shows and movies and you're not so mad at me that, like, I'll never get a job again. And so I have to do it a lot for them to not be afraid of that. But I've had some successes.
Okay. I said you didn't have to name names, so I guess I can't.
I mean,
press
like,
you on
look
the
around at who's talking. And also, like, you know, the new people that are talking. I mean, I still feel like I'm in the new group.
Right.
You know? And so I'm also supporting the people who, you know, pulled me into it.
Is Twitter part of the baby steps of this? Because some people, like, I make fun of, like, Twitter activism. But I know that, like, when I've been retweeted by a famous person on some issue, like, it does, like, I mean, it can blow something up.
I mean, really, it blows, like, sometimes there's, like, a journalist or a writer who, like, Cass Sunstein, you know that congressional scholar? He retweeted me one time, and I was like, oh, my gosh, like, he is so smart. Wow! Then I was like, I'm going to learn more about the Constitution in case I run into him, like I have something to say.
Okay. Okay.
For me, that was like,
that was big.
The greatest.
That is a first.
We are almost out of time, but I do want to, on that note, because I don't know how we, that was a peak really, in the conversation. But I do
wait till we tell Cass. I mean, like, that's going to be.
Oh, gosh, please tell him. I'm going to get a huge fan. Yeah.
I want to, you talked about the three things that are coming up, but for you, what's next for you? What are you focused on kind of in the next kind of coming weeks, months?
What I'm really focused on is a couple things. Like in the immediate future, I'm focused on voting and election reform in New York State. We have, like, there's legislation written. We have finally, like, a true blue New York. And it's embarrassing to be a New Yorker. And, like, no offense to anybody here from Idaho, but you have better voting laws than we do. And how can I have my, like, New York swag on when my voting laws are so old? Like, I feel like an idiot. So I'm working on that immediately. Then there's all kinds of state legislature races that are going to come up in 2019. And I want to make sure that there are state laws passed, especially in these states where young people registered and got active this year. I feel like getting your candidate in isn't really the win. What you need is the law to change to feel like your vote, your activism did something. And so I really want those, like, legislative wins for these young people because I really want them to stay active into 2020. And that's a little ways away, so we gotta, like, keep the momentum.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Anna, thank you so much for joining us today on the Women Rule Summit for our live podcast. It was a lot of fun, and thank you, Piper, for sharing your journey in activism and also the practical advice about how to engage productively at the ground level and enact change. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to my co-host on this episode, Anna Marie Cox of The Great Show with Friends Like These. Check it out wherever you get your podcasts, and while you're doing that, leave Women Rule a review. It helps new listeners find the show. Women Rule is produced by Jenny Ament. Our booker is Jessica Andrews. Dave Shaw is executive producer of Politico Audio. One more note before we go. We'll be off next week for the Christmas holiday, but back in the new year with a great conversation with Representative-elect Katie Porter, one of the dozens of newly elected women in the next Congress.